floating in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
Hello and welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. Today, I am extremely honored to have Mike Ganino as my guest today. Mike is a culture guru, and he has a great book about to be released in May titled Culture for Dummies. Mike has agreed, reluctantly, to take on my list of questions that have been sent in by listeners like you, and it's what I call the Dirty Dozen. Hello, Mike. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show today.
Donald, I feel like it's been years in the making. I've been following what you're up to, and we finally got to become friends this year. So this is super fun. I feel like a bucket list item is being checked off my list.
I feel the same. I've been stalking you for years. You know, so I was like, oh my God, it's nice. Yeah. So before we get going here, why don't you tell some of the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you kind of got started in this crazy business that we're in?
So I got started in the restaurant business really because I was 15 and I really wanted to go to a Reba McEntire concert, as most 15-year-old boys do. I don't know, what a weird thing, right? And my grandpa said, sure, yeah, you can go, but you gotta buy the ticket. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's, you know, it was $70 or something at the time at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. And I thought, okay, that's cool, I can do that. I got $10 a week for allowance and I can save for 7 weeks and no problem. He's like, no. You've got to buy your ticket, and you've got to buy your grandma's ticket, and you've got to pay for the hotel, because we lived out in the middle of the desert.
Oh, wow.
3 hours from Las Vegas. And so I thought, well, I started doing the math, right? And I'm not a math guy, but I was like, well, carry the one and multiply by two, and I wasn't going to have the money. So I was telling my friend this at school, and she's like, oh, you should come work at Pizza Hut with me. And I thought, oh, cool. She was like a waitress at Pizza Hut. And I thought, that's great. Yeah, I'll walk around and sell some pizza and make some tips. So I got the job, and I didn't really think about what I'd be doing. And I walked in, and the guy gave me this rubber apron. And I thought, well, this is not cute. This is not a good look.
Not a good look.
And, you know, as we both know, and everyone listening to your show, I was the dishwasher.
Yes.
And I learned pretty quickly that if you're helpful and you keep giving people stuff and you keep learning, that it's a great industry for you to grow in. And so I quickly became, you know, a phone answering person on Friday night, taking pizza orders at Pizza Hut, and then eventually moved into being a server, became a trainer. Eventually, my whole family came and worked there. My grandma was getting ready to go back to work, and she was going to go work for the county. And instead of working for the county, I was like, no, you should go work at Pizza Hut. Because again, I think I started this tradition of bring your granny to work day.
There you go.
And so she came, and then my sister came, and my uncle came. We had a whole family thing. And, you know, I then went on and did other things. I was a flight attendant and ended up living in Chicago after 9/11 when I wasn't a flight attendant anymore. And I thought, I don't have any skills except for, you know, asking people if they would like a drink and taking their trash. So what do I do? And I went back to the restaurant industry, and that's when I joined Potbelly Sandwich Works. And I stayed there for 7 years. I was an assistant manager when they had about 7 stores and stayed until we had, you know, many, many more stores than that, and ended up as heading up the training department and opening a ton of restaurants, and leveraged that to end up at Let Us Entertain You, then became the head of operations at Homemade Pizza Company, took them from 10 locations to 40, and then finally was a partner and chief operating officer at Protein Bar, where I helped grow that from, you know, a kind of a smoothie bar into the kind of hot, trendy, quick service restaurant that we ended up with about 15 locations in 3 cities. Went through a private equity thing there and then said, okay, well, what's next for me? And found myself drawn to Los Angeles, ended up here consulting. And through consulting, I found that I really loved doing workshops and speaking. And so I kept trying to find more of that. And today, that's what I largely do, is I travel around and I do keynote speeches. I go into companies and restaurant groups and work with them, hospitality groups, and work with them on their culture and their leadership and where the stories are inside of the company, and then help figure out, are these the stories we want in the company? And if they're not, how do we change them? Which I believe is the key to changing culture. And last year, the folks from the Dummies books, you know those Dummies books.
Yeah.
They came and said, hey, we think your ideas are dummy enough. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but they came and said, hey, we like your simple way of explaining things. And so I ended up writing Company Culture for Dummies. And then here we are. And then finally meeting Donald Burns.
Well, I'm really honored to have you on the show. You know, that's a real wild ride that you've had. I'm just telling you right now, I did not know half of that about
really?
You. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, that is a crazy, crazy ride.
See, I was stalking you harder than you were stalking me then.
I need to stalk you a little harder then. I gotta do a little more research, I think. I definitely didn't really do my my background check here on you. All right, you ready to jump into the Dirty Dozen?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Number one, what is your one word or quote that you aim to live by?
You know, I have been using and thinking about this quote for a long time. I read this book called Animal Dreams by an author named Barbara Kingsolver. And one of the quotes from the book that I love says, "The very least you can do in your life is figure out what you hope for. And the most you can do is live inside that hope." And I love that because so many people, especially even in this industry that we work with, are, you know, it's like I go to bed, I wake up the next day, I do the next thing. Actually, it's one of the things I love about your whole ethos, Donald, is, you know, in your book, in your ideology, in your messaging, it's about what do you really want here and how do you go for something great?
Right.
And I think it's such a challenge that people just don't even know what they're trying to do. And so I think the first thing we got to do is figure out what do I hope happens? What does it look like if we're winning in this company, in this brand, on this shift or in my career? What's winning look like? And then that's the least you got to do, because otherwise you're just spinning your wheels every day. And the most you can do is go say, I'm going to go live in that. And I just think it's such a good reminder. I need that reminder sometimes of like, oh, you know, writing this book, as you know, writing a book, it's like, oh, another day, another 1,000 words.
Yeah.
It's so easy to not think someone's going to read this on the other side and it could change something for them. So how can I live into that more and get clear on what I want? And and I know in your work, you and I've talked quite a bit and I've seen what you do with folks. That's a huge part of it, is saying, what do you want? What does this look like for you? So I just love that quote.
That's an awesome quote. That might end up on one of my, newsletters.
Yeah, do it. I'll email it to you so you have it.
Email it. That's an awesome quote. That is a great quote. and you're so right. You gotta live in it. You know, whatever it is that you want, whatever your dreams are, your aspirations, you have to live them. You know, life is way too short just to sit on the sidelines.
Yeah,
I always say life is not a. It's not a. You know, it's not a viewing sport. It's a participation sport. You got to jump in.
Yeah. And not only is it that you got to go jump in, sometimes people haven't taken the time to say, what am I doing?
Oh, yeah.
Where am I hoping this goes?
Yeah. Same mindless stuff every day. Just going through the motions.
Somebody has this quote that they say, it isn't mine, so I'm not taking credit, but I have no idea where it comes from. But there's this idea of somebody saying, oh, I have, you know, 20 years of experience. You run into those people, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And what I always think, and what I saw somebody say one time, some version of this, and it's not my original idea, but is, no, you're mistaken. You have 1 year of experience that you keep replaying for 20 years.
That's it. Exactly.
And I just think there's a much more fun and a much more engaging place to play from if you figure out, what does winning look like? What do I hope this all feels like? What are we aiming for here? And I just think it's such a key thing to figure out.
You gotta have some deep talks about with yourself. Actually, I say, you know, I asked my father once when I was younger. I go, you know, Dad, are you crazy if you talk to yourself? And he said, he kind of paused for a second. He goes, you're not crazy if you talk to yourself. You're crazy if you talk to yourself in different voices. And I was like, okay, good to know.
I don't know. So I had all that experience in the restaurant industry while also studying acting and improv acting. So I often speak in different voices, proving your dad's point true.
There you go. Well, the guys in the white coat will come for you pretty soon. Nice thing. It's a nice jacket, long sleeves, wrapped around the back. You'll like it. It's nice.
I'll know who sent him, Donald.
You know. All right. Question number two. What is one thing you think restaurants can do today to improve their business?
Wow. You know what I think it is? I think the number one thing I see missing, because you can't really improve anything until you get clear on it, is I'm going to say it's one thing with a two-part answer. Is that help? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So the biggest thing is really thinking about experience. And we get obsessed with talking about guest experience, customer experience, employee experience is you know, certainly something that folks in my world talk a lot about. It maybe doesn't happen at the restaurant level. But what I think is, instead of thinking about the experience, instead of thinking about each step along the way, here's what I do. And I do this when I'm working with people on redesigning their employee experience so they can create these great epic experiences for their employees, which is going to pay them back in so many ways.
Oh, yeah.
But whether you're thinking about a guest or an employee, what I think is more useful than saying, what is the experience? Because sometimes it's hard. It's like, okay, well, let me think. If I'm walking through the lobby, what do I see? What do I feel? What I think is more useful is to do this exercise where you say, when your guest leaves or when your employee goes home after their first day, mm-hmm. their 100th day, when they sit down with, you know, mom, dad, bae, honey, mm-hmm. whoever they tell their little stories to, what is that story? And like actually the story. I don't want the bullet points. I don't want the highlights. I want you to say like word for word, what are these folks saying? What is the story they're telling? Because it's never accurate. They don't go home and say, well, I arrived at 9 a.m. for my first day, and by 9:05, I was in a booth with an employee handbook. At 9:07, the manager came over and offered me water. They don't do that. We tell stories. We say things like, wow, it was so cool. When I got there, they had this little welcome box for me, and my uniform was there, and it was like they were totally ready for me. And then I got to meet these people, and it's so cool the way we do this. What are those stories? Because you cannot improve anything
exactly
until you are clear on what is the story you want people to tell and what is the story they are currently telling. And then you can see that gap and you can improve it. So that's actually what I think would be the biggest thing, is that the habit is start listening for, looking for, and figuring out how to fuel better mm-hmm. stories. It's not about controlling stories. People do that like, you got to control the narrative. No, it's impossible. Yeah. What you can do is fuel the narrative by putting a lot of the right stuff in there.
I love that. Yeah, that's so on target to what I work with my clients on. And the kind of the driving question I use with my clients is the question you want to ask yourself. I always say the quality of your life depends on the questions you ask yourself. So one of the questions I want my clients to ask is, how did we make the guest feel? Or how did I make my team feel?
Yep.
Again, it's that story. What are they going to say? You know, what's the feeling behind their, you know, their day?
Yeah.
Experience in your restaurant. So
I was working with a group recently and they were saying like, oh, our employees, you know, are doing this and that, and they don't care about customers. They don't care about guests. And I said, okay, so let's talk about the employee experience. And it was like, well, no wonder they don't care about it, because they don't feel you care. And over here, you talk about being a hospitality first brand, but look at the way that when they come in, how they're treated. Look at the way the back of the restaurant is in disarray. Mm-hmm. This was like a hotel thing. But look at the back of this space, and you're telling me that hospitality matters. And to them, hospitality was about doing great things for other people without them asking, so they felt welcome. And I thought, mm-hmm. well, look at your new, and they literally had a new employee there that day who was sitting in a booth by themselves 30 minutes before anyone went over. Wow. And it wasn't that the person got there 30 minutes early. They were there on time. 30 minutes, no one went over. 30 minutes, somebody went over with a handbook and said, hey, welcome. Here's some paperwork. Fill this out and do that. Didn't offer them coffee. Didn't offer them water. And I said, and you think that person then believes the sign in the back that says hospitality first? The reason mm-hmm. you're not getting the guest experience you want is because you're not giving a great employee experience.
Exactly. That is so on the money. That is like that. Yeah. Boom.
Well, you and I come from the same school on that. So this is like,
oh, yeah, no, definitely.
Old guys on the porch talking.
Yeah. I love it. You know, I love it when you see that employee handbook, and you know, people are our most valuable asset, but they don't treat their, their people for anything.
Yeah. It's like, well, show me some proof that that's,
yeah,
show me some proof. And it's like, oh, well, I don't got any.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I love it. It's like, you talk a good game, but I can tell by your turnover rate and, you know, the morale around here that, you know, it's, you definitely got everyone in compliance and not commitment. So.
Oh, I love that line. That's a juicy line.
That's a good one. you can use that one. All right. Number three. What new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life this past year?
You know what? I'm going to be remarkably consistent here and say it's really evaluating the stories I tell myself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in this last year, my the amount of speaking stuff I'm doing has grown tremendously. The amount of, you know, kind of inbound requests for my time has grown. And at the same time, I had this opportunity to write a book. And I'm a... You know, I went to, like I told you, I was living out in the middle of the desert, a kid in a school that, you know, we didn't graduate very many people, and very many of the people that graduated never left. And I went to college, dropped out of college to be an actor, and never went back, and was working in the restaurant industry for my whole life. And so when somebody came and said, hey, we think you should write a book, of course, the first thing was like, wow, like someone's going to like pay me to write a book, and they're going to make a book. And then all the stories start to show up of like, well, who are you to write a book? And what do you have to say? And maybe right. people will think it's stupid, and maybe your ideas aren't good enough, and maybe that. And I think the thing that I've worked on, I think I'm still working on, really, to be honest, is really, really evaluating the stories I tell myself. I think that the stories are also beliefs. And in the company Culture for Dummies, in the book, I wrote a chapter on managing ourselves. It's at the front of it. And I remember some of the editors were like, well, I don't get why in a book about culture you're talking about managing ourselves. And I was like, well, I'm not taking it out. It's got to stay. Yeah, because I believe that the beliefs we have, if I believe that employees today are entitled, it's going to cause me to create stories about them, which cause me to treat them a certain way.
Exactly.
And that's then going to impact everything. And so I think if we have these stories living inside of us that are untold and unchecked, it's very dangerous. And so the habit that I've gotten, that's improved my life in the last year, and that I know that if I double down on, it will improve it even more in the year to come, is really evaluating the stories I tell myself to say, is that true? Is something else true? Do I need more information before I say that? And I think the ultimate question is that story beneficial and useful? And if not, maybe let's write a new one.
Exactly. That is so true. Because, you know, I'm a big believer, you know, I'm like you, culture flows down. It doesn't flow up. Culture starts with you and it starts with what your belief systems are. You know, it's funny you talk about, you know, it's actually it's a psychological thing called the Pygmalion effect. And it actually is a case study where these, you know, basically what you expect, you kind of get out of. I guess this psychologist came to the school and he told the teachers that, you know, I did some testing on your students. These kids over here in this group, these are the gifted kids. These are the really smart ones. They're going to be like the superstars. And so they just told him that. And then so the teachers actually treated the students differently because they were told that, you know, they're special, they're gifted, they're smart. You know, these are the people that are going to rise to the top. And then it came back and the truth was known that he just actually randomly picked people. He didn't actually do anything, any testing. So it's kind of funny that what you expect, you kind of tend to get. If you think you got a bunch of slackers, you get a bunch of slackers in your team because people tend to rise to your level of expectations.
Totally. Totally. Yep.
Definitely. All right. Number four. What is one book or audio book that you recommend?
You know, right now, what I think a lot of folks who probably listen to this show, the folks listening to this show, one of the things I think could help them a lot, there's a great book called Radical Candor.
Oh, yeah.
By a woman named Kim Scott. Have you read it?
Yeah, it's a good book.
It's great. And it is one of the things I think if people can get good at that, it fixes so many things. Mm-hmm. So it's a book about how to be a kick-ass boss. And basically, the idea is how can you get more honesty in your group. She has this idea of like, you've got to care personally about somebody and be willing to challenge them directly.
Yes.
And there's this whole model in there that I really love. And it's very similar. Like I have an idea around, we should be kindly honest with people. Kind because we're saying, I get you, you're a person. This is who you are and what you want. And it's kind because like, I need to do the right thing, which is tell you the thing you're doing is not going to help you in the long run. So I think that's kind. Nice is just being like, oh, yeah, everything's great. That's nice because it's friendly, but it's not kind. The kindest thing to do would be to say, hey, person, do this. So I wrote about that in my book, and I think her book does, you know, it's an entire book about how to have radically candid relationships at work. And I think it's one of the things I see over and over and over in a business is that people just aren't saying what they need to say to each other in a way that's productive so they can get better results. So I think it's a cornerstone book that if people read it, it will improve things that they didn't even think it would improve.
Exactly. It is an awesome book. Yeah. And I'll put in the show notes, I'll put a link on Amazon for it.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
She'll like that.
All right. Number five, who is your biggest influence?
Wow. Interesting. It's such an interesting question because you can take it from who's my biggest influence is like, how did I get here and who guided me versus who today is the person that influences your action. So I'll answer the first half of that.
Okay.
I think my biggest influence around like getting me to where I have been and the way I think about things is I really go back to working at Pizza Hut with my grandma and my whole family. And my ideas around culture and work largely came from that. I'm not a person that says work should feel like family. I think that that's not necessarily what makes a great workplace. But I think that families have some specific habits that are useful at work, like being able to be honest with each other, like being able to recognize that there's a person with feelings on the other side of your performance feedback, on the other side of your missed expectations as a human. And so I think for me, being steeped in working with my family at such a young age and having my grandma be my boss for 3 years of my life in high school really shaped what I thought work was supposed to be and really shaped what I thought you could do with a team of people. And again, we were at this Pizza Hut in the middle of the desert, kind of a, you know, not a place people come from, a place people stay. And there was always this idea that just because we were there didn't mean we had to play like we were there. that we could live to a higher standard, that we could act to a higher standard, and that we could hold ourselves accountable for achieving things that didn't seem like people like us should achieve. And I think that is a huge reason why I've been able to do a lot of the things I've done.
That's awesome. Yeah. Grandmothers are a big influence. My grandmother was a big influence on me.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number six, what do you think is the most common reason restaurants fail?
Yeah. I think the most common reason is not being able to look at reality.
It's true. Denial is a powerful drug.
It's this idea. And even I wrote about this on LinkedIn recently there was a Bon Ton and there was Toys R Us that are closing and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they keep blaming Amazon and Walmart and millennials. And it's like, no, it's your fault because you haven't evolved your service process. Exactly. You haven't listened. Yeah, you haven't listened to your customers. When I meet a restaurant that says they don't want to do online ordering, I think you don't care about your customers because that is what your customers want right now.
Exactly.
You can't say you love customer service and giving people what they want and saying, I'm not doing online ordering because no. And so I think the most common reason restaurants fail is that they aren't listening to the stories being told by their employees about working there. They're not listening to the stories being told by their guests and then saying, okay, if that's the story they're telling, what do I do? And it's keeping a lot of people from evolving and it's going to keep a lot of people going out of business.
Exactly. Yep. All right, number seven. Now this is an adult show, so you don't have to hold back.
Oh my gosh!
What is your favorite curse word?
This is really crazy because it's so off brand for me to do this. I think there's no better curse word than fuck.
Yes.
Like it just can be used in so many different things. It can be a happy word. It could be a real happy word. It could be a sad word. It could be a fun word. It could be so many things. And I think a strategically placed F word can really do something. What I don't like is I don't like the F word ever aimed negatively at a person. I think every other use of it can be fun.
Right. No, I agree with that. I don't direct the F word towards people. I use it just more as a statement of like where I feel right now in the moment. It's like, you know.
What is yours?
Oh, fuck is my favorite one.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. So
I saw some meme the other day. It's like, you know, I've been known to, you know, give out, you know, at least, you know, five fucks by 11 o'clock. I'm like, I've already gotten like a dozen out by then. What are you talking about?
I don't think I use it that frequently, but of the words, it would be the one I would use the most. Yeah.
I think there was a study I saw when I was at the gym the other day. I was like, you know, because I watched the news while I'm working out, and there was a study. I think they say like the average American says their first swear word by 11 a.m.
Wow.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm like, by 11 a.m., it's kind of late for me. I got like one, usually like nine or so. Or
I mean, you know, a guy who writes a book called Your Restaurant Sucks, you got to be comfortable with that.
Yeah, be comfortable. And I tell people in the beginning of my book that I don't use, you know, and I have some F-bombs in my book. And, you know, the reason being is I tell people is I don't use it to degrade you or, you know, to make you feel bad. I use it to shake you up and get you out of your comfort zone because I want you to understand that sometimes when I talk about things, it's serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. Number eight, what's another job or career that you thought about getting into? You probably had a few.
Yeah. I think this is my good answer. What I really, really wanted to do for like a significant period of my life was to be a cruise ship director.
It's like
can you see it?
I can see you. Yeah. I can see you doing that.
Like Julie from The Love Boat. It's like, you know, they're kind of entertaining. They're kind of emceeing everything, but they're in a leadership position. And, you know, I have this thing of like, I like being a leading artist. So I like being creative and I like being, but I don't want to be creative to hang art on a wall that no one sees. I like using my creativity and my presentation skills and my performance skills to help move things forward. And I think that a cruise director does that. They're part entertainment, part host, part leader. And I always thought that would be such a fun job, but it's such a lifestyle thing that like, you know, at the periods of my life where it was like, oh, I totally am in a good place where money wise and life wise, I could take off and do whatever. It was like, oh, I'm too old to do it then. So I think that ship has sailed.
No, I don't think so. I think you're still,
I don't know. Now I'm married and that'd be, you know, I'm leaving my spouse and the dogs to go away on a cruise. And I don't think it's a job for a nearly 40-year-old married dude.
That's true. That's true. Good point.
What about
good
you?
Point. You know, I always wanted, well, and I'm going to date myself as far as my age. I mentioned this when I talked to Bruce about this. I wanted to be a zoologist. I wanted to be like Marlon Perkins from Wild, you know, Mutual Wild Kingdom. I wanted to run the zoo and like, oh, there's Jim wrestling with the alligator. Oh, that's going to leave a mark. You know, I want, I want to be that guy.
I love it. That I could see it.
Yeah. I was like really in animals and biology and zoology. Yeah. When I was in like, mid school, and then reality came around. And then for a while, I went to college to study marketing, and I wanted to be like the next big marketing guy. I wanted to do like McDonald's ads. In fact, when I got out of college, I went to Chicago and I had an interview with Leo Burnett.
Yeah. Great company.
Big company. But you know, you think, you know, I got this thing. I'm going to work with this huge company. I'm going to be a rising star. They start you out like at poverty level, you know?
Yeah, they do.
I was like, are you kidding me? I can't afford that. I have loans and stuff like that, student debt. And so I actually started working back in restaurants again, kind of, a little dissuaded about it. But then I started actually liking working in restaurants. And then I had a really good mentor who kind of gave me some advice and just kind of got me, to go down a different path than I ever thought. So
I love that. We all have these journeys.
We all do. Critical moments in our life, critical turns, I think. All right, number 9, room, desk, and car. Which one do you clean first?
None. No, I am a hoarder. I love things around me. We are not on camera right now, but if we were, I strategically placed the camera so you can't see this stack of like 50 books on my desk. I'm surrounded by like 500 books on the bookshelf. I probably would say that my car is the cleanest of those. I don't know. I'm married, so like my room is clean, but not because of me. And my desk is never clean, and that's my space, and my car. So I would say of those three, probably the car, but not really any of them.
Yeah, I would say I'm kind of like Bruce, Irving a little bit from Smart People. I'm a little OCD. I mean, everything's got to be in this like certain spot, certain angle. Like all the water, all the bottles in the fridge have to be facing a certain way. I mean, I'm a little weird about that. So
I love that. Yeah, it's kind not of, me.
It's kind of great.
Not me.
All right, number 10. What are you not very good at?
Cleaning my room, house, or car. My room, desk, or car. What am I not very good at? Oh my gosh, so many things. I think the thing that I'm not good at that impacts me is that I'm not a great follow-up person. So like, this is why I wanted to go from consulting to like workshops and speaking, because I'm not great at the deliverables. I'm not good at the like, okay, I'm going to leave and go do this and send you back, a training program or something. Right. So when I first started consulting and that's what I was doing, I was miserable all the time because it's just not, I'm a great relationship guy and I'm a great one to many. And so I've learned how to get around that, but it's still, there's a demand on me to produce stuff and give stuff. And I have to put so many reminders and so many check-ins because I don't know, it's like drudgery to me. It's like, oh yeah, we did the talk and now we're good. And now I need to send you this. I need to send you that. So I'm not good at that.
That's just one of those things. I'm a little bit like you on that. Sometimes the follow-up stuff is, a little tedious. I do like the interaction. I do like the one-on-ones. I do like the coaching calls. I do like, doing the training and getting that, that energy in the room. Oh, it's like addictive.
Yeah, me too.
But I find the way I kind of tuck myself into doing some of the other stuff I don't really like to do is I tell myself I have to do this so I can get to the good stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, what a great, that's a better story to tell yourself. I'm talking about story all day.
I got to do this. Effective
story.
So I can get the good stuff, which is the stuff I really love. So, all right, then I probably know the answer to this one. Number 11, do you make your bed in the morning?
No, never. No. Never. You know what? There's periods of times that I do. If it's like sunny and lovely when I wake up, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this. It's a good little habit. But no, I'm not one of those people that says like, you've got to make your bed. But yeah, no.
Yeah, I have to make mine. I can't like, I tried the other day. Just as an experiment, I tried to leave the bed messy and then to go about, go out in the, in the living room, go get some coffee and stuff like that. And I was just like, I stood there with my cup of coffee in my hand. I just started like feeling the anxiety building up in me. I'm like, okay, I can't take it. Go make the bed. So I couldn't do it.
So crazy.
I couldn't do it. I tried.
No. And who cares? I'm like, who's going to see it? Get out of, if you're in my bedroom, you don't care if the bed is made or not. So
that's true. That is very true. All right. Here's the last one. Number 12. What is your best tip for getting the most from your day?
Making your bed in the morning. No, I'm kidding. My best tip for getting the most from your day. Wow. I love these. These are the hard-hitting questions here. Let me think. The best tip for getting the most from your day. I think it's, for me, I know that I am at my best if I take a little bit of time to be centered. And so whether that's some meditation in the morning, whether you're a yoga person, or whether you just like go sit outside in the, in, you know, on the porch in a quiet space with some coffee or tea, I think finding a little bit of space to just settle, because we tend to get up and we hop on the phone, we're looking at social media, we're doing email, then we take a shower, then we get in the shower, we get in the car, we listen to the podcast, we do that. And there isn't any time for all the little stories that goes back to that, all the little stories that are ruminating in your head, all the ideas and stuff. There's never a time for them just to settle. And like, I don't need to write them down. Whatever comes to my brain, if it doesn't come back later, it wasn't meant to be there. Just saying, I'm going to take 5 or 10 minutes and just be settled. I find that really grounds me, because there's all this stuff going on. And if I don't get it out, if I don't let it, and you know, journaling is really effective for that too, of like, just get the words out, because it's better to have them on paper where you can be like, okay, that's done, than to ruminate on stuff all day. And so for me, it's finding some stillness each day.
That is true. That is so true. I'm a huge believer in self-care, that you got to take care of yourself, because, you know, the industry, the restaurant, hospitality industry in general is a very giving one. We give so much to other people, but if we don't take time to recharge ourselves, then, you know, it's like, I tell people, and I use this analogy, would you go to work with your phone 25% charged and try to expect to make it through the day? And they go, no, of course not. I said, well, that's what you're doing if you don't take some time to recharge yourself in the morning to give yourself the energy you need, because then you're just basically going through the day, you know, at just like that phone. You're trying to run through the whole day on 25%, and you're not going to make it. And then you know how it is. At the end of the day, when you run out of energy, that's when you're short with people. That's when you're snippy. That's when you just snap at people. And then, you know how it is. Words have lasting impact. So, you know, at the end of the day, you say that one thing to that server or that line cook, or, you know, and you just kind of snippy with them. And then now, again, how'd you make them feel? What story are they going to go home and tell, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly it. And even if you're not doing that, if you're just not aware of your own energy, say that you don't snap at someone and you're not aware of your own energy, so you're not grounded and centered. And then people then make up stories about like, oh, you know, so-and-so seemed off today. There must be something wrong. There must be something bad. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm getting fired, because you're just not centered in yourself. It. So it creates all this stuff. It's a big deal.
Yeah. It's so amazing. Energy, you know, and I'm a huge believer in body language and energy. And, you know, 55% of how we communicate is nonverbal. It's just amazing how people just don't have any self-awareness about them, their energies, and, you know, what they're not saying by not saying anything.
Yeah. Well, and then we say that like, oh, that's something, some special gift. And it's like, no, it's not a special gift. It's taking the time to do it. The people that are centered and grounded and aware of themselves are simply people that are interested in being grounded and centered and aware of themselves. I'm firmly against this idea that to be a great leader, you have to be born on some special mountain in the woods and carried away by angels. Like, I think it's great leaders is about the habits and the things you do consistently. And if that is true, then anyone can do it. You don't have to be born some special being. Nope. I think too many people have fed people that BS, and it's just not true. Anyone could be a great leader. Anyone could be a great manager if they want to, and you could be centered and you could be grounded and you can be self-aware if you want to.
I believe that too. I believe that 100%. And in fact, I find very few people that are, I mean, you might have some natural skills for, you know, communication or reading people or stuff like that, but leadership definitely, it's learned behavior. It's like, it's like being a chef. It's just, it's practice, you know,
practice and skill.
I mean, I had some natural thing, but it was, you know, the extra work that I put in. I wouldn't, you know, when I worked for my dad in high school, I would get my prep done, and then I was like, can I go hang out and watch, you know, some of the guys online and work with them? And he's like, yeah, as long as you're caught up on your work. Soon he realized that he would give me more work to do, and I had to learn how to get faster to be able to do it. But again, you know, this is, you know, long, I would come in on my days off, or I'd come in early, or I'd stay late and hang out in the line and try to learn as much as I could. But you got to have that learning kind of mentality. I want to learn. I want to improve. you know, the Japanese call it Kaizen, constant never ending improvement. It's like, it's a philosophy I've lived my whole life by.
Yep. Well, there's, you know, whenever there's an issue, it comes down to, is it skill, is it will, and is it ability? And when I think about, you know, being self-aware, being a good manager, it's like, well, skill is you just learn to do things in a certain sequence or in a certain way. Will is, do you want to? And ability, I don't know that anyone doesn't have the ability to chill out, listen to someone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's never ability. It's always skill or will, and often it's will.
Yeah. I would say 99% it's mostly will.
Yeah. Freaking will. It's always Will's fault.
It's always Will's fault. Freaking Will.
Damn. Oh, this is fun.
It's funny. Hey, well, Mike, I want to say thanks. You know, thanks for going through the Dirty Dozen questions. And I'm going to have links in the notes on the show for anyone interested in contacting Mike on how to improve their culture in their business. Or if you are looking for a dynamic speaker for your next event, Mike, just quickly, how can people contact you?
We got a special thing. So if they go to MikeGanino.com/Donald, so MikeGanino.com/Donald, there's actually, we have a little three-part video series people can grab, and it talks about how to uncover these stories. So the first one is about what are the beliefs and things you're telling yourself, and how is that impacting your business? The second one is what can you go learn about what your employees are saying? And then the third video talks about, so what do you do with all that to start changing and shifting your culture? So so you can go there, MikeGanino.com/Donald, and get that little three-part video series as a little, like, get started on this work.
Perfect. And your book's coming out in May, right?
Yeah, it came out May 8th, 2018. So depending on when you're listening to this, go pre-order it. Or if you're listening to it after May 8th, go order it. It's on Amazon. It's everywhere, Barnes & Noble. You can pick it up anywhere you like to get your books.
Yeah, and I'll have a link for the book on Amazon, definitely in the show notes. So get over there and get it. This will be up before the book's release, so if you're lucky, get the pre-order. Make sure that you get that copy fresh to your door via Amazon. So in closing, I want to say, you know, your restaurant's culture is like the life force of your brand. It creates energy, and that energy transcends and influences your staff. And now that trickles down to encompass the guest experience. Now, those on the outside looking in, it can either become a beacon or a warning sign. So never underestimate the power that culture has on your restaurant's bottom line. And if you're looking for more tools to take your restaurant to the next level, please go stop by my website, therestaurantcoach.com, and you can sign up for my free 4-part course called the Restaurant Success Series. Yes, you heard it right. It is free. I just want to make sure that you get the help to get the restaurant that you truly want. The course will show you the 4 keys it takes to run a successful restaurant. And if you want more intense results, email me to schedule a call about my restaurant mastermind group or a conversation about creating a customized restaurant coaching program for you and your restaurant. Again, www.therestaurantcoach.com today. And if you've not picked up a copy of my book, Your Restaurant Sucks, Embrace the Suck, Unleash Your Restaurant, Become Outstanding, it is on Amazon. What are you waiting for? I don't believe why people are waiting. You know, there's a great deal over there, too. If you buy the paperback, you get the Kindle version for free. Now, I love to hear from listeners, too. If you have any topics or questions you'd like to shoot me or my guest that you want them to answer on the show, email me directly at donald@therestaurantcoach. And with that, we are going to sign off.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.donaldburns.net or download episodes at iTunes and Stitcher Radio.